There's a word from the Lord that I believe is appropriate for where many of us stand in this season of life. It's real easy to find. It's in the last chapter of the first book of the Bible. If you would journey to Genesis chapter 50, there's a powerful word from the Lord that Dr. Gunn would tell you ought to sit in the top five favorite scriptures you know. Put it up there with Romans 8, that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. Put it up there with Isaiah 40, they that wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. Don't let it fall too far behind Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want. And if you would find the 50th chapter of the book of Genesis, there is a passage of scripture that I pray the Holy Spirit would pour into our hearts today as we get ready to go forth into the week that awaits us. I want to begin reading in verse number 15 out of the New King James Version of the Bible. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him." So they sent messengers to Joseph, saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus shall you say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now, please, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father.' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, 'Behold, we are your servants.' Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me. But God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive. Now, therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones.' And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them." Verse 20 is where I want you to hang out. "But as for you, you meant evil against me. But God," somebody say, "but God," "meant it for good." By the prayer of God's people and guidance of the Holy Spirit, if it's all right with you today, I want to talk about lemonade. You may be seated in the presence of the Lord. The title of today's sermon has divided this congregation, because there's some folks sitting on your pew who can't figure out why you're laughing about a drink. And then there's some of us who are culturally connected and know that the title references a phenomenon that is sweeping across the world, a topic that is trending on Twitter, that has captivated conversations in cubicles for an entire week, can be found on every blog, webpage, and analysis of sisters around the world. For those who are not connected or maybe a little bit age removed, lemonade is the title of the sixth solo album dropped by Bey. That's Beyonce for those who don't know. Her sixth solo album, Lemonade, has sold 550,000 copies in 1 week, averaging $3 million in sales per day. It's guaranteed going to be her sixth number one album on every Billboard chart in the entire world. This Beyonce, who used to sing with them other girls, has once again used her creative genius to redefine the music industry. For those who don't keep up with contemporary culture, Beyonce has become a master at releasing albums with no marketing, no promotion, and no warning. She simply drops them on iTunes and Amazon and Google Play, and they go platinum overnight. This sixth solo album, Lemonade, was not released on iTunes or Google Play or Amazon. Rather, it was released as a visual album on HBO last Saturday night at 9 p.m. And since then, it has taken the world by storm. Because when you watch and listen to the album, you see that it is a transparent, empowering insight into the personal and real struggles that Beyoncé has gone through with her family and her marriage, and suggests that they are struggles every woman will have to deal with. The title of the visual chapters read like a maturation of faith: intuition, denial, anger, apathy, emptiness, accountability, reformation, forgiveness, resurrection, hope, and redemption. When you listen to it, you'll find out, Dr. Gunn, it's an album about reconciling broken relationships, about overcoming hardships and disappointments, about confronting demons, both inherited and self-created, about turning situations around and finding ways to forgive those who have failed you, and ultimately seeking for triumph in the midst of adversity. The title of the album is given as Lemonade. It's given because Beyoncé reflects over her grandmother, Agnès Dérion, for whom her clothing line is named. And in the album, Vicky, while she reflects over her grandmother, she says, and I quote, "You spun gold out of this hard life. You conjured beauty from the things left behind. You found healing where it did not live and discovered the antidote in your own kitchen. You broke the curse with your own two hands." And towards the end of this visual album, we are taken to the 90th birthday party of Jay-Z's grandmother, Hattie, who stands before a crowd and lifts up the real and relevant cliche when she says, "They gave me lemons, and I learned how to make lemonade." And lemonade is a reference to the reality that at some point in life, you've got to learn to push through adversity. Beloved, I came by to tell you that the power of this album is not simply in the music, but the message. Because if Beyoncé, with all of her wealth, can still struggle, and if Beyoncé, with all of her celebrity, still has pain, and if Beyoncé, with her fine self, can still deal with infidelity in her marriage, it is a rude wake-up and reminder to us as we sit in this sanctuary that there is no level of income, there is no level of education, there is no level of authority, there is no level of fame and fortune you can reach which will grant you immunity from the rough realities of life. I came by to remind somebody today that life happens to everybody. Loss happens to everybody. Lies happen to everybody. Disappointment happens to everybody. Rejection happens to everybody. Hurt and heartache happens to everybody. And lemonade is a reminder that if you go through these situations, you got to find a way to look for triumph in the midst of adversity, to pick yourself up every morning by morning and declare that if I just press and push, today will be better than tomorrow. Lemonade means you're going to turn a situation around. You're going to declare, "It will not kill me, it will not control me, and it will not conquer me, but I've learned to look life in the eye and declare, whatever comes my way, I'm going to stand on my feet, I'm going to trust in God, and I'm going to push through until I find victory in the midst of my battle." I wish I had some lemonade saints who would just declare that come hell or high water, I'm going to make the best out of everything I go through. That's lemonade. Now, if you're not of the Beyonce generation, then you've heard this before. This ain't nothing new. You got that from the Gospel of Gladys Knight. Henry, because she said in 1973 in her song, I Got to Use My Imagination, or she got to the chorus, and this is what Gladys said, I got to learn to make the best of. Yeah, and then the pips came in, best of. A bad situation. And that's all lemonade is, learning to take what was bad and finding something good, turning the rough and making it to your pleasure, taking the evil and working it out to something that makes you better and stronger. That lemonade means you learn to turn something around. Beloved, that's a good life lesson. You better learn early in life how to make some lemonade, how to make the best of a bad situation, how to find victory in spite of the odds being against you. You've got to learn how to make lemonade. The question you might be asking then, Reverend, how do you do that? It's easy. I didn't come to preach Beyonce. I came to preach Bible. And you can't get out of the first book of the Bible without being introduced to a brother who's got a PhD in lemonade. He knows how to turn something around. In case you never read about him, his name is Joseph. Great-grandson of Abraham, grandson of Isaac, son of Jacob. He's somebody every saint of God ought to know. His story begins in the 37th chapter of Genesis and goes all the way through the 50th chapter. And when you read those chapters, you'll find out that Joseph had some lemons dropped in his lap. You recall that Joseph is the favorite son of Jacob. Jacob loves Joseph more than any of his other sons because Joseph is the firstborn son to Rachel, who's the only woman Jacob ever really loved. And because of that, he favors Joseph in a visible fashion by giving him a coat that's multicolored to remind everyone around him, that's my boy. Allow me to tell you that if you ain't figured this out yet, whenever God puts a visual and visible sign of favor on your life, there are always going to be those who hate you simply because God has favored you. And true to form, his brothers hate him, not only because of his favor, but because of his audacity and ambition to be great. They decide to kill him, and Reuben, the oldest son, says, no, let's not kill him, let's throw him in a pit. While he's in the pit, his brother Judah decides, let's sell him into slavery. Now, I want to pause and parenthetically tell you that the name Judah means praise. And isn't it ironic that the brother who praises is the one who throws him under the bus and sells him into slavery? Don't tell me what shouting saints won't do to you. They sell him into slavery, and he winds up being owned by a brother named Potiphar. Joseph proves himself to be loyal, faithful, and trustworthy. He rises in Potiphar's house, and Potiphar puts him in charge of his entire household. And everything is seemingly going well for this brother who was thrown in a pit and sold into slavery until we meet Mrs. Potiphar. And Sister Potiphar won her some JoJo. She approaches him every day with a solicitation for adulterous sexuality. Joseph, being a man of character and integrity, refuses, and one day she grabs hold of him, and he runs off, and she grabs the coat off of his back. When Mr. Potiphar comes home, he finds Joseph's clothes in the house, and Sister Potiphar knows she got to come up with a lie, so she says that Joseph tried to rape her. And as a result, Joseph is unjustly incarcerated, thrown into jail for not doing what Potiphar's wife said he did. While he's in jail, he proves himself to be loyal, faithful, hardworking. He becomes a steward of the jail. One day, two of Pharaoh's servants, a butler and a baker, are thrown into jail, and they can't sleep because they've got bad dreams. But Joseph knows how to interpret dreams, and he interprets both of their dreams, and he says to them, listen, just do me a favor. Don't forget about me when you get out of here.
But when you read the end of chapter 40, you'll find that the butler forgot about Joseph. He hooked the butler up, only for the butler to forget all about him. So now he sits unjustly in jail until the day that Pharaoh has a bad dream. Pharaoh can't interpret it and wonders, is there anybody who can help me? The butler remembers that there's a brother in jail by the name of Joseph who has a gift that can be used to help Pharaoh. So Pharaoh calls for a brother who's in jail because the brother in jail has a gift. Let me pause parenthetically and tell you, you better be careful of canceling out brothers who are locked up and locked down. Just because a brother is incarcerated does not mean that he does not have a gift that can be a blessing to this nation. Oh, Donald Trump, you ought to hear that message. Just because I'm colored and locked down does not mean I don't have a gift that can be a blessing to the nation. Let me try it again. Just because I'm brown and locked down does not mean I don't have a gift that can be a blessing to the nation. So they called his locked up brother to come to Pharaoh, and he interprets Pharaoh's dream and tells him, you've got a famine on the way, and you better start stockpiling resources to get ready. Pharaoh is so impressed with Joseph's gift that he elevates him to be vice pharaoh of all of Egypt. Here is a brother who was almost murdered by his own family, thrown in a pit, sold into slavery, lied on, unjustly incarcerated, and by the end of his story, he sits as the second highest man in all of the world with authority in his hand. It gets gooder though. When the famine comes, the famine forces his own brothers who threw him in the pit and sold him into slavery to come before Joseph to beg and to borrow to have resources. And when they figure out that it's Joseph on the throne, they are rightly afraid because they remember what they did to Joseph and they figure Joseph is going to get revenge. But Joseph looks them eyeball to eyeball and says, listen, I ain't worried about y'all and what you did. Because whatever you meant for evil, God was able to turn them lemons into lemonade and work it together for my good. Here, beloved, in the book of Genesis is a man who found triumph in adversity. A man who made the best of a bad situation. The man who pressed and pushed his way to a destiny that could not be denied. The question you ought to be asking for your own life is, how do I make lemonade? How do I push and press through? How do I turn things around? What must I do in order to make the best of a bad situation? I hope I'm preaching to somebody, because in the life of Joseph, there are at least four real lessons I want to drop on you as your homework assignment to do when you leave church today that'll help turn your lemons into lemonade. Can I give you four of them and let you go to brunch? Number one, Joseph teaches us that if you're going to turn situations around, don't let your context change your character. Say that again, Rem. Don't let your context change your character. That's a nice way of saying, don't let what you go through change who you is. You've got to be consistent in your created character and not allow the context you're in to change who God made you to be. When you begin reading about Joseph, you're going to find out in chapter 37, there are two things about his character that are undeniable. He has integrity and he has ambition. He tells the truth on his brothers and gets them in trouble, but he walks in integrity and he's got a dream of greatness because he has ambition, and he determines that no matter what happens to him, integrity and ambition will always be part of his character. Whether he's in the pit, whether he's in prison, or whether he's in the palace, his character remains the same. And beloved, that's a real word to somebody today. You got to make up in your mind that you will not allow what you go through to change who you know God made you to be. You've got to remind yourself of how the Lord shaped you and determine you will let no thing or no one have so much power over you that they fundamentally change who God made you to be. I don't know who I'm preaching to today, but don't you let nobody steal your joy. Don't you let anybody change your happiness. Don't you let anybody make you insecure. If you know you got it going on, tell yourself you got it going on. And if they don't appreciate your character, learn to appreciate yourself. Can I preach to somebody in this house this morning? If he don't love you, baby girl, buy yourself a ring, get yourself an outfit, make a reservation for one on Open Table, go sit yourself down, put a mirror in front of yourself, and tell yourself, I got it going on. You got to appreciate your own character. I feel like
preaching 10 o'clock. Can I give it to you in Twitter form? Don't let ugly make you ugly. Don't let being around bitter make you bitter. Don't let broken make you broken. Don't let insecure make you insecure. You've got to remind yourself of who you are in the core of your character and determine that no one has enough power over me to change who God made me. God made me joyful. You're not going to make me bitter. God made me generous. You're not going to make me selfish. It's so easy when people have done you wrong to reach a point where you begin to ask, what's the point in remaining who I am? I ought to just become like everybody else. But every time you change your character, part of your created nature dies. And you're letting people kill you because you don't hold fast to your character. You can be ugly all you want. You can be mean all you want. You can lie all you want. You can be nasty, don't look at nobody. You can be nasty all you want, but I'm going to be who God made me to be. I'm bubbling over with joy. I walk in a room with a smile on my face. I believe in the best and not the worst. I trust God in every situation, and I'm going to be who God made me to be. Would you look at somebody and tell them, just be yourself? He's the same in the palace as he was when he was in the pit. And you know, that's a real word, because there's nothing worse, Judy, than seeing the Lord move somebody from the pit to the palace, and then they get all brand new. They were nice and could speak to you when they made $5 a week. But now that they're in the corner office and they drive a Mercedes and walk in some red bottom shoes, they walk around as if they don't remember who they were when they didn't have anything at all. And God says, I'm looking for some people who are constant in their character, that it doesn't matter whether you're up or you're down, you still have joy. Doesn't matter whether you're broke or whether you're paid, you still walk with security. Doesn't matter whether you're in a Benz or a Buick, you still trust God. Whether you got Prada or Payless, you still walk with integrity in your heart.
It says. Don't let context change your character. If you want to turn lemons into lemonade, not only must you be consistent in your character, but number two, don't let what happened hinder you from helping. Then no matter what you've gone through, you still ought to be willing to help others. It's going to get quiet right around here. Because one of the things you see in the life of Joseph is that no matter what he's gone through, no matter what has happened to him and been done to him, he's still helping others. He helped Potiphar. He helped the butler. He helped the baker. He helped Pharaoh. He even helped his no good brothers when they showed back up. And that's something. But he remembers what I want to press on you. That whenever God gives us an opportunity to help, we have an obligation to help.
Go say that again, Pastor. Whenever God gives you the opportunity to bless someone, you have an obligation to bless someone. Whenever God creates an opportunity to give a helping hand, you have an obligation to give a helping hand, and you cannot excuse yourself simply because somebody did you wrong. Now, let me tell you why that's real. Because when we've been done wrong, and when we've been thrown in pits, when we've been sold out, when we've been thrown under the bus, when we've been lied on and lied to, the devil makes us so self-centered that we then begin to believe that the world owes us something. And so you sit around in that pitiful pity party, woe is me, and look what they did to me, and the world owes me this, and I don't have to do anything until people do right by me. And God says, no, that's not going to turn your situation around. What's going to turn your situation around is when you recognize that regardless of what they did to you, you still have an opportunity and an obligation to help somebody else. Because, here it is, it's deep. When you help someone else, you sow a seed that will always reap an unexpected harvest. I'm gonna say it again. When you help someone else, you sow a seed that reaps an unexpected harvest. That God has a way of taking the good you did over there and rewarding you over here. Now, I want to make sure you get that, because what happens is you'll do right by somebody who never does right to you. You're going to help some folk that when you need it, they're going to forget about you. You're going to be kind to some folk who are never going to repay your kindness. You're going to bless some folk who, when you need something, they're going to run in the opposite direction. Yes, you are. You're going to be good to folk who are going to be mean to you. As a matter of fact, you know somebody who fits that bill right now. Every one of y'all just had an image of somebody that... Because you're looking on them to repay you. But they are not the source of your harvest. The source is the Lord. And let me tell you how the Lord works. The Lord sees you being kind to him and says, now he may not bless you, but I'm going to send her over there in the time of need. So when you're good to him, you'll reap it from her. And when you're kind to her, you'll reap it from him. And when you're good to them, they will show up and bless you. The Lord has a way of blessing you in unexpected ways through unexpected people at unexpected times if you keep doing right. That's why the Bible says, let us not grow weary in well-doing. Wish I had a Bible reader, because in due season, we will reap if we faint not. If you keep on loving, you're going to reap. If you keep on helping, you're going to reap. If you keep on biting your tongue when you feel like cussing them out, you're going to reap. When you keep on giving a helping hand, you're going to reap. When you keep on forgiving, you're going to reap. When you keep on being kind, you're going to reap. When you keep on helping, you're going to reap. If you keep doing good, you will always reap. So let's say, listen, you want to change this thing around? Don't let your context change character. Don't let what happened hinder you from helping. Third thing he says, watch this. Don't let what you're going through govern your gift. Don't let what you're going through govern your gift. The key, Judy, that turns Joseph's story around is that God gave him a gift. Not only was he a dreamer, but he could interpret dreams. His gift was the ability to interpret dreams. And that gift that he had was what allowed him to occupy the destiny God ordained. Now, I want you to see this. He uses his gift when he's in prison to interpret the dream of the butler and the baker. And when Pharaoh has a dream he can't interpret, the butler tells him about Joseph. Joseph comes to Pharaoh and interprets his dream in the palace. So Joseph used his dream ability to interpret dreams in the palace and in the prison. He had a gift. He used it in the palace and in the prison. One more time. He had a gift and he used it in the palace and in the prison. Now, Daryl, let me tell you why that's real. Because anybody can use a gift in the palace. Anybody will show out when there's a reward right at hand. Anybody does their best when they see that there's an immediate benefit. But the real power of Joseph is that he recognizes the gift God has given me is not limited to the palace. I've learned to use my gift when I'm in the prison because there's no circumstance beneath my giftedness. That whatever gift God has given me, I am obligated to use it wherever the Lord may place me. Can I teach Bible? If he hadn't used his gift in the prison, the butler never would have known he had it. So when Pharaoh needed it, he never would have been called. Because if you don't use your gift in the prison, God will never put you in the palace. You've got to learn to give your best and work your hardest and try your best to bring your gift to the table regardless of your situation.
Okay. Faye, they aren't. Let me tell y'all how I got to Alpha Tree. We'll get a quick story. Alpha Tree's biggest blessing in my life outside of my kids. I want to tell you how I got here. Before I came to Alpha Tree in 2008, I need you to know that for 10 years, I pastored in Springfield, Massachusetts. When I was in Springfield, Massachusetts, I was in a great church. They loved me. God's favor was on us. We grew from 65 members to 3,000, had 3 weekend services. I was there for 10 years. It was a great circumstance. I had no idea who Alpha Street Baptist Church was. I ain't never heard of y'all. I never looked at your website, never been to Alexandria, didn't know who John Peterson was. I didn't know y'all wasn't studying, y'all wasn't thinking about y'all. I know nothing about Alpha Street Baptist Church. I was pastoring in Springfield. Now, you need to know that Springfield is kind of old school, and like many old school Baptist churches, they had something I really didn't like, and that would be afternoon services. You remember, if you're old school, you didn't have 7:15, 10, and noon. No, you had 11, and then you came back at 3:30 for afternoon worship. Now, I'm just going to be honest with y'all. I hate afternoon worship services because I believe after the benediction, we ought to go home, eat some chicken, watch some football, and I'll see y'all next Sunday. Ain't nobody getting back up, come out, no 3:30 afternoon service after we even had worship in the morning. We don't need all of that. That's why I ain't but one or two afternoon services here at Alpha Street for the entire year, because I don't like it, Marcus don't like it, and we ain't coming back. So I'm up in Springfield. We got 3 morning worship services, and my friend who pastored an old school Baptist church invited me to come to a 3 p.m. afternoon service for the usher's anniversary. Now, I don't like 3 p.m. services, but I love my ushers. And so I decided I'm going to go. We've had 3 morning worship services. We get there for a 3 p.m. afternoon usher's anniversary. And y'all, there are 13 people in the sanctuary, 11 of whom came with my choir. And so I'm mad because I have had 3 services already. I'm at a 3 p.m. usher's anniversary and ain't but 13 people in the sanctuary. And I'm sitting in the back trying to get my mind and my spirit right because I'm mad. It's 3:00. There are 13 people here. Why don't we just act like we had church and everybody go home? I did not want to preach at 3:00 for 13 people. I'd already had 3 services. And so I made up in my mind, Faith, that I'm gonna give them a 7-minute sermon. I ain't going deep. I'm not getting Jesus out the grave. I'm just gonna stand up and give them some cliches. You know, he may not come when you want him to. Hey. I figure I can do that for 7 minutes. And I'm going to go home. Because don't nobody want to be here. So I got in my mind, 7 minutes, 3 o'clock, 13 people. I make my way to the pulpit. And the Holy Spirit convicted me. Don't you get up there and clown. God called and created you to be a preacher. That's the gift he put in you. And it may be 3 o'clock with 13 folk, but you get up there and preach. And to the amazement of my choir and my members, I preached. I mean, I preached like I ain't preached in a long time. I rocked that pulpit. I sweated my suit out. I got Jesus out the grave, killed him, and got him up again. And then I hit him with, he may not come. Hey, God, we had church. So let me fast forward. There was a brother in that congregation who heard the sermon. He bought the CD and sent it to his friend who lives in Alexandria. His friend had a cousin who's going through something, so he gave it to his cousin who shared it with his wife. And his wife is a member of Al Street Baptist Church. So the wife heard the sermon, said, I like the way he preaches, mentioned my name to the pulpit search committee, who then sent me a letter requesting me to apply to be pastor of Al Street Baptist Church. So if I had stood in front of 13 folk and decided not to use my gift, the Lord never would have opened the door that allowed the application that allowed me to be called to my destiny. All I'm trying to tell you is that wherever you are, wherever God places you, use your gift. And I'm so glad I preached to them 13 folk, because God used that to launch me to 7,000. And I say to God be the glory for the great things that God has done. If you use your gift, it'll turn your situation around. Don't disrespect the gift because you don't like the situation you're in. Proverbs 18:16 says, your gift will make room for you and bring you before great men and women. Don't let your context change character. Don't let what happened hinder you from helping. Don't let what you're going through govern your gift. Can I give you the last thing this teaches me? If you're going to make some lemonade, if you're going to turn things around, if you're going to make the best of a bad situation, don't let your problems cause a perplexity about God's presence. I worked a long time on that one. Basically, don't ever allow the pain and problems of life to cause you to wonder if God is there. Because the truth be told, you can go through so many things in life, you begin to doubt whether God is really there. If God was with me, why is this happening? If the Lord loved me, why am I going through this? If God was by my side, this would never have happened to me. You can struggle so much and so long, you begin to wonder about the presence of God. But what you see in Joseph that is so admirable is a brother who, no matter what he struggles with, he always knows and confesses that the Lord is still with me. Joseph understands that faith in God is a belief that no matter what I go through, that the Lord is right there with me. And I came by to drop that on somebody this Sunday morning in the midst of your struggle and your pain. I want you to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God is with you. No matter what the doctor says, God is there. No matter what happens on the job, God is there. When he says he don't love you no more, God is there. When you're running out of money, God is right there. The Bible says, I will never leave you nor forsake you, that I am with you to the ends of the earth. If you wake up in heaven, God is there. If you wake up in hell, God is there. Where can I run from your presence? And where can I flee from your spirit? The Lord is. No. Here's what I want you to catch, that Joseph reminds us of. The presence of a problem does not signal the absence of God. Just because it ain't going right, just because it didn't work out, just because it hurt you to the core of your heart,
does not mean that God has left you. And you've got to have faith that says, no matter what, I know that God is there. Let me tell you how that'll turn things around for you. Because if you know that God is there, then the consequence is, it's got to get better. Let me try that one more again. If God is with me, it's got to get better. If God is with me, it's got to turn around. If God is in it, it's got to work out for my good. So Joseph could look at his brothers and say, I know you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Can I tell you how you prove you have faith? It's not by how big your Bible is. Not proven in how many ministries you join. I don't see it in how loud you shout. But the real test of your faith is that no matter what comes your way, you learn to lift up those two words. Words that ought to be in the heart of every believer who can look at the worst of life and still say, but God. When you learn to say, but God, things are about to turn around. When you say cancer, but God. When you say heartache, but God. When you say laid off, but God. When you say broke, but God. When you say down, but God. When you say alone, but God. But God. I wish I had some but God in the sanctuary who can look at the worst and still say, but God is able. Hey. But God. Okay, sit down. I'm trying to get out of here. But God. Watch what he says. He says, you all meant it for evil. God meant it for good. I want you to see the shout. The word meant literally means to weave something together, to fabricate, to manipulate, to weave it together. He says, you weaved evil. And God took your weave and weaved good. You missed it. You weaved evil. And God took your best attempt to destroy me and weaved it into something that promoted me. I wish I had some saints who saw what was happening here. That after you've done all you can do, God will take what you did and weave it into something that makes me better. And I thank you for what you did. Okay, here, he says this, you weave something and God took your weave and used it for my good. It's suggesting that the Lord was able to take your stuff and integrate it into his. Because what makes him God is not that he prevented the evil, but he used it for something better. Okay. Some of you may remember, before my dad died, we took a trip to India. While we were in India visiting the sites, we were told we had to go see this factory, this company, this man who made handmade tapestries that were worth $10,000. Now, Terry Joe, in case you know a tapestry, I didn't know what it was. That ain't nothing but a rug you hang on the wall. So this man makes rugs you hang on the wall by hand, and they cost $10,000. He makes handmade rugs you hang on the wall for $10,000.
So me and my dad went because I got to see what a rug that hang on the wall for $10,000 looks like. When we walked in the little shop, the man has got a rug up and he's working on weaving the fabrics by hand. And I'm looking at him weaving the fabrics, and what I see does not look like $10,000. The fabrics were miscolored. There was no pattern. The threads were not even. It was knotty on the back. And it honestly looked like something I could do by myself. So he's weaving, and I'm watching, and I don't see $10,000. I see something ugly and messed up and knotty and discolored with no beauty to it. So I asked the lady, I said, why does that weave cost $10,000? It don't look like nothing. The colors are misfabriced. The knots are hanging out. It doesn't look like anything I could do. I could do it by myself. This is what she said to me. Because you're looking at it from the back. You're looking on the wrong side. He's weaving from the back. But if you turn on the other side, you'll see the beauty of what he was weaving. I know somebody's a little Sunday slow, but you're looking at the back of your life, trying to figure out what the Lord is up to. But God says, if you just make it to the other side, you'll see the beauty of what I'm doing. If you make it to the other side, you'll see it worked out for your good. Is there anybody here that you didn't know what he was doing? But when you got to the other side, you saw you were stronger and better and blessed. And I thank God that he weaved their evil and used it for my good. Tell somebody, tell them, make it to the other side. Look, I got to go. Y'all got to go. We got another service. Don't let your context change your character. Don't let what happened hinder you from helping. Don't let what you're going through govern your gift. And don't let your problems cause perplexity about his presence. He's there. And since he's there, he's weaving it together for your good. It may not look like it from this side. But if you just trust God, he weaves it together for good. There's some people sitting right around you. You would never know the evil that dropped on their lap. You would never know by the way they look today, the hells they had to walk through. But they found out that what others meant for evil, God can use for your good. It's time to make some lemonade in life. Stop crying about what's sour and spoiled and wrong. Recognize that God's given you the ability to turn it around.